My hot take is that the Instagramification of product management is driving people insane. We're bombarded by all these messages about how great things could be or how great things are or how great leaders will do this or how people's organizations are working in a certain way. And ultimately, that's very, very different from the reality a lot of people are experiencing. And that eventually creeps into people's heads and gives them stress.
All right. So thanks very much for coming back to another episode of One Night in Product Hot Takes Edition, where I get someone in from somewhere around the world, talk all about stuff that they care about, get straight to the point and share that with you so you can go and find out what they care about too. If you're interested in doing that kind of thing, you could pop over to onenightinproduct.com/hot, where you can grab a slot, come and find me. We can have a chat and we can share your hot takes with the world and find out what you've got on your mind. So that's onenightinproduct.com/hot. But enough waffle from me. Let's get going and get started with John Cutler's hot take. All right. So I see in front of me some shuttered windows, a picture of either a llama or an alpaca with some sunglasses or just normal glasses on, and a bunch of other bric-a-brac on the floor. But I also see a very well-known gentleman. I know who you are. I'm sure everyone else will know who you are. But just for the record, who are you? Where do you live? What sort of stuff are you working on? And most importantly, what is or are your hot takes?
Okay, John Cutler. I live in Santa Barbara, California. My six-year-old son and partner, Sharon. The background in product management and UX, and I've written a fair amount of product content, I guess, over the years. And my hot take is that the Instagramification of product management is driving people insane.
It's certainly driving me insane, and I just have to look at it. But what do you mean specifically? Like, so, I mean, obviously, yeah, we all know, but I'll just say for the record, you know, Instagramification, the fact that everyone's putting their best pictures out. And actually, it's funny because I think of maybe some of the pictures I've put out, you talked about, you know, kids, like I've gone out with my kids, my family. Yeah, we have pictures on our wall, the way I know that they were crying like 3 seconds before or afterwards, and that we all had a big argument that day and stuff like that. So Instagramification, we're putting our best stuff out there on Instagram, Facebook and the like. So what do you mean specifically then with A, the Instagramification, like to be specific, and also how is it driving people crazy?
Well, I think about my father. So my father worked in one company for decades. He's an economist. And I doubt that ever in his career, outside of maybe imagining maybe what the academic life of an economist was, in a university, for example, or maybe seeing one of his friends go on a book tour, that he ever for one moment sat there doom scrolling LinkedIn or doom scrolling Twitter or doom listening a podcast or doom scrolling templates on Miro or whatever they're doing. I doubt for he 1 minute spent his time doing that. And I think about that a lot. And one reason I think about it is that I think that a lot of people generally regard themselves as pretty balanced and pretty capable of discerning reality from how we gloss things over. But any of the research on social media or any of the research on how people process all of this content and process all of these signals indicate something otherwise. And so the basic idea of the Instagramification of product is we're bombarded by all these messages about how great things could be or how great things are or how great leaders will do this or how people's organizations are working in a certain way. And ultimately, that's very, very different from the reality a lot of people are experiencing, even within the companies that are theoretically touted as being so amazing. And that eventually creeps into people's heads and gives them stress and makes them worried, you know, and drives them a little bit crazy. And even if you fashion yourself as someone who won't do that, I think it sort of gets under your skin a little bit, or at least my observation is it gets under people's skin a little bit. And so that's what I mean by the Instagramification of product.
But is it the Instagramification of product management itself? Like, do we think that, mean, I don't know. I saw something the other day. There's like millions and millions of product managers or people that have product management in their LinkedIn bio or have worked in product management at some point or another. And do you think that all of these people are putting their best selves out there? Or do you think it's just like a small cadre of turbo content influencers that are basically either trying to sell a course, you know, just like you or me have done, or trying to sell a book, like I don't think either of us have done yet, or, you know, just trying to basically position themselves in such a way that they kind of almost like the come to me, you know, the come to Jesus, like I'm the person that can save you. Whether they can or not, like, it depends, just like all other things in product management. But it's really almost like a bubble that they're creating to, not just they, we're creating to kind of perpetuate this idea that people need educating and you should probably buy that education from X, Y, or Z.
I think it's a confluence of factors, and then you've hit on a couple of them, and they're combining to whip people into a frenzy a little bit. There are certainly people out there who are making considerable amounts of money projecting that they have the answer one way or another in product management. Certainly they do that with all technologies, anything, you know, it could be anything that we're buying. There's always people out there who have the answer. Then you have people who are trying to do their best and are trying to be well-meaning and trying to put things out there. I was speaking with a product leader recently, and she posts things on LinkedIn with so much heart and soul and putting it out there. And we were discussing the challenge of either trying to add all the context to the statement to make it land realistically, or even getting out there and being sort of picked up in the algorithm. And she was very, very aware that this was a choice. You could either have some hot take in the first three lines and then try to like add the nuance afterwards in her mission to be able to influence people. So some people have a very well-meaning mission to influence people. In her case, it was to lift up female product leaders. And so she has this very strong mission, and she was having to play this particular game. That's another part of it. Another part of it is no one wants to badmouth their company. In fact, badmouthing your company also, badmouthing your company not only gets you probably into hot water, but it also is hard personally. If you badmouth a company you're at for a couple of years, what does that say about the time you spent there, right? So that's very difficult. People don't want to say bad things about people or make those types of statements. That's another thing about it. And then you have all sorts of things combining to whip people into a frenzy with this stuff.
But what does it look like then? Like, imagine a world where it's not Instagrammified, where everyone's prepared to talk shit about their companies and they're all, you know, just able to just say anything that they want, almost like that Ricky Gervais film, like The Fundamentals of Lying or whatever it was called. So they could just say anything. Everything, there's no filter, hashtag no filter. What does that look like? Like, what does your average day on LinkedIn look like if everyone's basically just going all in on everything? Like, would that even be better or would that actually be worse?
It'd probably be worse because that would be as context-free as the next thing, right? You'd point out patterns that everyone could relate to and they'd all nod their head at. In some ways, that does happen, right? In all of this content, or in much of this content, there's this subtext of what bad looks like that everyone nods their head vigorously and knows that it happens in their company. And so in some sense, it is happening at the moment. I don't think we're getting these super explicit stories that challenge these narratives of how great it is in certain places. But if you dig one level deeper, it is. On LinkedIn, I don't think you see that. But for example, if you stumble into Reddit or other places, people will say, I worked at Google and it was not like this, or I worked at eBay and it was not like this, or I worked at this company and we were treated like robots. So once you're in the professional sphere, I think of LinkedIn, people don't do that, but I think we do kind of have a world where people sort of understand the reality of it on some level. And yeah, who knows whether it would make it better or worse, but just brainstorming there, you know.
I guess the simple question is that what can we do to actually feel like we talked about like what we should do, I guess, but like what can we practically do to try to either seek out, engage with, or even force to be presented to us some of these voices or some of these maybe dissenting opinions that actually could help us be a little bit happier with our day-to-day lives, work at least, not generally, but like work lives.
I think the model of what you've been doing with these meetups and pub meetups is a great example. And that's something that people could just create as a to-do this quarter, is that I'm going to have a random Zoom call, maybe if they can't afford to be in one place, but if you have a city that's big enough where there's a bunch of PMs there, just get a group of people there together and talk about your jobs, what you're doing, challenges you're having. I think that's a to-do item everyone could take away to be able to do that. I think that the second thing that people could think about is join a community. One of the best ways to contribute to communities is join a community. And there are communities, and I think many of them are struggling or suffering, because it's a lot easier now to just sit and receive the content from a bunch of different sources than to hang out in one place. And I think, frankly, people got sort of sick of communities via Zoom or whatever during the pandemic. And so maybe they lost interest in that. But I think it's an interesting example of join as many communities as what you blast out there.
But that's a tricky one though, right? But that's a tricky one, because there were too many. And it then comes down to things like newsletters as well, right? You could sit there and say, right, fine, go and subscribe to newsletters. You can subscribe to your newsletter. You can subscribe to my newsletter. Please subscribe to both of those newsletters, anyone that's listening. But there's also Lenny's newsletter, and there's Akash's newsletter, and there's all these other newsletters out there. And I'm not going to say anything against any of those newsletters, apart from possibly my own. But you know, there's too much content. Some of them are paid, some of them are free. You don't necessarily want to subscribe to too many, certainly on a paid level. Half the time, if I'm looking at my inbox in the morning and a newsletter pops in, you know, maybe I don't even read it. And if I don't read it straight away, then I forget to read it, and it just kind of becomes cruft in my inbox. And like, that's where it starts to become tricky for me, because I agree, like, go out and find or make communities, you know, try and find alternative ways to consume content. But at the same time, there's so much content, and there are so many people that have basically had the same idea that you just said, that it almost then becomes hard to keep up. Because you're like, well, which of these newsletters do I follow now? They're all recommending 10 more newsletters each as well. So like, which of those do I follow now? So I guess that's an additional question. I mean, I'd say that the newsletters themselves maybe are a little less, or some of them at least, are a little less Instagramified. But then some of them are very much like, this is how this successful company did this thing. So like, there's obviously a real mix of content there. So doesn't that just put us in the same boat as we were before? Like, there's too much content. How do we pick?
Well, I think one element there is just limit the amount of time you worry about this stuff
to begin with. I think that's the key point, right? And without, just sorry to cut you off, but like, is it just simply the fact that product managers need to stop worrying about this stuff so much and just do their job and try and make peace with what they've got in front of them?
My hot take is that many PMs are bored and they're blocked and they have a ton of time on their hands, which in theory they're going to use to get better at their jobs. But actually getting better in your job in the day-to-day is exceedingly difficult. And many PMs feel that their professional development doesn't move fast enough in their role. And therefore it's important to be able to, they want to keep learning. They make learning a big part of their job and consuming all this stuff. That's one take there. And the next take is that ultimately you could learn all this stuff, but let's just take a product principle or a development principle to what we're learning. We have so much inventory of knowledge that we're putting together. How much of it are we moving across the Kanban board to putting in practice? And so if you're not putting it into practice, and if you're not figuring out what to do with it, then why are you doing it? So I have a feeling at the moment that it's so easy to assemble all this content and try to divine the future from all these things and try to figure out everything, that you can't nearly put any of it to use in your current job. And that's what I would say, that many jobs are vastly underutilizing our curiosity. And therefore, we just apply that curiosity to generally trying to uplevel our career or try to learn about what we're doing. And so I think that that's the big challenge for me, for anyone really, is how to put this stuff to use.
So whether the empowered product manager then, I guess, is the question. Like, I mean, is that kind of a, you know, are they in danger of extinction? Or do we think that there's still plenty of opportunities out there for people to maybe not get to the Instagram level, but at least their Facebook photos level or whatever. Like, is there a chance for these people to find a way through in whatever context they're in? Or do you think that, to your point, it almost sounds like battening down the hatches and just trying to get through it somehow, which is a bit of a sad way to look at it, right? Like, you want to think, you want to believe that you can make a difference. You want to believe that even if you're not going to get to this Marty Kagan, you know, ivory tower, you might call it, or some have called it, like, you might still believe or want to believe that you can make steps towards being like that. And maybe you'll get halfway there and you'll be better than you were. Like, is that maybe the limit of people's ambitions? Like, should they kind of set their sights lower, or should they just go and get other jobs? Like, are there enough good companies out there, or potentially good companies out there, for people to have the ideal jobs in all of them? I mean, I'm going to probably err on the side of no on that one, but like, what should they be aiming for, I guess?
This is what we were talking about before. I think this is about discovering a personal philosophy and attitude about where you're at in the world right now and what you're doing. I think the problem at the moment is we're using these placeholder proxy words like empowerment or grit or agency or, you know, pick yourself up, you can change your company, or all these things are not real. They are kind of myths that we're putting out there as signifiers for our own coming to grips with our professional identity, what it means to have a job, what it means to be a community member in your community or doing these things. And I think that in some ways it becomes almost like a personal professional mythology, in a sense, that we're creating for ourselves. And the reason why I say that is I've been spending a lot of time rereading philosophy books and figuring that. And you know what? We've discussed these questions. We've discussed these questions of individual agency versus community. We've discussed our perspectives on whether we need to take a short-term or a long-term view in our lives. We've discussed these things about what we prioritize in our lives. And I think the challenge at the moment is there's a lot of people telling you how you should feel about your career. Not a lot of people saying, come to grips with yourself. There's a great book, Getting to Yes with Yourself, by the author of Getting to Yes. And it's basically about negotiating with yourself. And I think there's not a lot of negotiating with oneself that's happening in many of these conversations. It's a little bit like people telling you what you should do, or trying to rile you up, or trying to get you excited, like you're going to go and kick ass at your next company. You know what? You might be very satisfied moving a tiny needle in a big lumbering company because you like having a job for 10 years at one place and seeing what that will do over the long haul. That might be what gets you excited. You know, you might love big safe. You might love that stuff. You might love the idea of what it's doing to the company. So I think that's kind of what's missing in this. And we look to these sort of signifiers, or we look to these messages out there for answers. And I don't think they're necessarily answering people's questions for themselves. So I think that that's the challenge. This is about as human as it gets in some ways.
So I guess what we're calling for then is maybe a little less judgmentalism from certain quarters. It goes back to me for that kind of good product manager, bad product manager thing that I know that you and I chatted about a little while back and you posted about on LinkedIn. But this idea that you're bad if you don't do these things, kind of fundamental attribution error all the way down, right? Like, I get it. Like, yeah, there are definitely things that product managers could do to get better or to be better or to try to do better things. But I also find it very, very curious these days in this kind of, I don't know, lest I be criticized for saying like agile, kind of modern, you know, lean, whatever that we're doing. But it's almost seen as like an all or nothing. Like, you do all of the things or you suck. Don't do some of the things. You've got to do all of the things. If you don't do all of the things, then you suck. But that seems almost like the very opposite of this kind of like iterate, find the next most important thing. Like, can we apply product management to our careers, or like create a backlog of change for ourselves? Like, you know, going back to this whole idea about like, what does things mean to you? Maybe that's the most important thing that you can do in a career, is work out what your markers are, what gets you out of bed, like you say, people that love safe or people that love working in feature factories or whatever. There's a lot of joy to be had from just cranking stuff out, I guess. Not for me, but like, I'm sure that there are some people out there, maybe some people listen to this, that quite enjoy it. Like, there's a craft of building software. It's okay to do that. And maybe let's not judge people quite so much based on whether they've got an O or an M after product in their name, for example, or whether they're working for a company that practices continuous discovery, or whether they have to kind of debate with the sales team every time they want to talk to a customer. Like, it feels like that fundamental attribution error is a big problem, because we're just sitting there blaming people's circumstances and projecting those failures onto the people.
I made a mistake with this over the years, and now that I look back on it, it's very clear to me. Back on cutle.fish is where I have 400 other posts before my current almost 300 other posts, right? You see, when I went through my scrum bashing phase, and this was maybe 2018, 2017, there's more, you just search for the word scrum or agile, and there's, you know, is agile alive? You know, what about scrum, or what about the rules of scrum? And I was very passionate at that point saying to people, look, if you have the title of PO, just change it in your resume to PM so you can get that job. I don't care, you know, or why are these scrum people so stubborn that this is the only way to do it? And when it doesn't work, you blame it. Or why is scrum so rigid, and why do big tech companies not use it? I spent a lot of time digging into topics like that for 2 years. And I think the reason why I was doing it is that I felt people were struggling. So I would talk to people in these environments who felt like they couldn't change Scrum for them, or they were being told only to do things one way, or they weren't able to get a job because they had a PO title, or they were being hurt in some way. So I was trying to do these things for good reasons and trying to be passionate about product management and how things could be, empowerment for teams, and that the team's going to get together and it's going to do the things. I deeply believe all of those things. I'm very passionate about those things. But certainly as the years progressed, I started to observe that people are directly impacted in negative ways by these statements. And they're not done by thoughtful people. They're done by tech CEOs who read an article and say, we don't need PMs anymore, we just need PMMs, because that's what Brian Chesky said, right? Or they're done by the CEOs of a massive enterprise because they read you don't need a layer of middle management. That's been my learning. It doesn't matter whether it's a high-performing big tech company or a massively laggard enterprise business. Probably neither are very good at continuous improvement, frankly. They are both really stubborn. One has a lot of inertia of growth, therefore there's not really that much desire to change. The other one has a lot of inertia around running a business for 75 years, so there's not a lot of inertia for change. The number of companies that actually do continuous improvement in big tech and in large enterprises is almost equal, is my hot take. It's just 10% of the companies. So you see big tech company right now, tell me what's going to happen in 15 or 20 years. They will be victim to the same inertia that the large enterprises are, that they're running circles around at the moment. Look at the large enterprises. Most of them are going to do sort of top-down change and are going to do these types of things. So continuous improvement as a general principle is very rare no matter what companies you're talking about. And I think that that's something that I've thought a lot about, where it's just so easy to say these things to come from a good place and want to help people. But once you understand the realities of business and you understand how a lot of people who don't really think it through do things, you realize that you got to be careful about what you say.
Well, there you go. So the takeaway, try and think about what you're saying. Don't judge people unfairly. And you're not the worst job that you've ever had. Yeah, we're all doing our best, right? And I think that's the biggest thing for me is, like, you know, I speak to a lot of people out there in all different types of companies, and I've worked for lots of different types of companies. I know that you've worked and worked with a bunch of different types of companies, and, you know, we've all done what we can, right? But yeah, just try and accept a little bit more. Bring the humanity back. In this age of AI, when we're being told that everything's going to get replaced anyway, we need like the last 1 or 2 years of humanity before it all turns to dust under the boots of a robot army, right? So I guess that's my takeaway. Let's just bring the humanity back and not worry too much about whether things are perfect. Well,
yep.
John, as always, It's been a pleasure to talk to you and look at your alpaca in the background. And yeah, we should continue to be kind to each other. I'll try and do it through my work. I'm sure you'll try to do it for your work. But as for now, thank you ever so much for your hot take.
Yep, I really appreciate it.